May it please the court, my name is Sean C. Thompson, here on behalf of defendant appellant Darcy Crawford. I intend to focus today on the argument that Ms. Crawford was tried and convicted of an offense not established by the General Assembly, although I'm more than happy to address any questions the court may have about the sufficiency issue I've raised. A person may not be convicted of a crime that does not exist in the law, and in this case, Ms. Crawford was convicted of a version of theft by receiving that does not exist. The prosecution alleged that over the course of more than 18 months, she received a collection of stolen items which had an aggregate value between $500 and $15,000. Prosecution charged Ms. Crawford under Section 4 of the Theft by Receiving statute, but neither that section nor any other section of the statute defines the alleged conduct as a Class 4 felony. A charge under Section 4 of the statute does not anticipate aggregation of the value of items received over time. In fact, it doesn't anticipate aggregation at all. The first five sections of the Theft by Receiving statute, including the section under which Ms. Crawford was charged, generally sets out the basic version of the offense. Section 1 establishes that a person commits theft by receiving when she receives a, quote, thing of value, knowing or believing it to be stolen and intending to permanently deprive the owner of that thing of value. Sections 2 through 5 of the statute set the level of the offense according to the value of the thing that was received. Importantly, these sections consistently use the singular term thing of value or value of the thing. And this is in contrast to plural terms used in the final two sections of the statute, which define versions of the offense which explicitly look to aggregate value of the thing or things.
So why should we apply the statutory rule that plural is singular and singular is plural?
Well, Your Honor, in this case, application of that rule would lead to an absurd result and make Section 7 of the statute superfluous. Both Section 7 and Section 4 make it a Class 4 felony to receive a thing, or in the case of Section 7, an aggregate value of things in $500 to $15,000. The difference is that Section 7 allows aggregation explicitly and sets a six-month time period on the window in which different things may be aggregated. If you read the plural into the singular term used in Section 4, you'd basically have a situation where it would be equivalent to Section 7, although the prosecution would be alleviated of proving the six-month time period that is required by Section 7. And of course, courts should avoid readings of statutes that make sections of the statute superfluous or null.
Well, Section 6 was about what you call professional fencing or something to that effect.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's a different offense altogether. That's a multiple.
Yes, Your Honor. That's when a person is engaged in the business of receiving and disposing of stolen goods.
And Section 7 requires also multiple offenses because you have to do it twice or more within a period of 6 months.
Yes, Your Honor.
So that, by definition, if you do it twice or more within a period of 6 months, the received items have to be referred to as things, don't they? Otherwise, unless you stole the same thing twice, which is unlikely.
Yes, Your Honor. So that's the point.
What I'm suggesting is there's a logical way to read 6 and 7 as necessarily requiring the plural.
Yes, Your Honor.
4 is a different offense. 4 is just a unitary act or one
a
act
unitary
of,
thing,
of,
yes.
Of receiving. And there, if you read things as things, not as one time receiving, you get a whole bunch of stuff like I think the defendant was accused of here.
Well,
it's
this
logical to read thing as things, or it could be one thing.
Well, in this case, Your Honor, what you're looking at is, you know, there's two different ways to read thing or things, I suppose, is that you can look at one instance where a person receives more than one thing, or you can look at what I think Section 7 is looking at, where you're looking at multiple instances, what would otherwise be separate instances of theft by receiving, but which occur in time span and then are combined. So there could be multiple things within one instance of receiving, but in this case we have 18 months where there's, I believe, three separate instances where she received minor items, and they're putting it all together and aggregating it under Section 4.
Are there special findings to that effect?
There was a special interrogatory where the jury found that she received, I believe, a saddle, a set of used golf clubs, a wedding band.
Well, excuse me, the dates that she received them, is there a special finding that she received one on one date and another on another date?
No, Your Honor, there's not a jury finding to that effect, but the way the evidence was laid out by the prosecution, I believe that she could have only received some of the items on April, in April of 2004. Another set of items which were in police custody in an impounded vehicle until in November of 2004, and then she was alleged to have pawned certain items on also in November of 2005.
Now, did the people prove it that way, that that's when she received it, or did the people prove she was in possession of it, and she said, well, this is how I came to be in possession of it?
The people only proved that she possessed the items through the dates that she pawned them, and then there was interviews, but they did not establish that she received certain items in certain days. It just that's the way the evidence laid out.
We don't know
necessitates
that, how do we know that they didn't, that the jury wasn't persuaded that she really did get them all at once, and that her story about having gotten them on different days was not true, and she just happened to pawn them on different days?
Well, I think that in that case, then the prosecution should have charged under Section 7, which allows for that type of aggregation, not under Section 4, which looks at individual things of value.
Well, let me ask you this. Under your theory, I guess if someone managed to get a truck full of computer monitors, all of which were worth less than $500, and the defendant said, yeah, I'll take those, then that defendant would be charged with only misdemeanors. I mean, you know, 10, 15, 20 monitors, but because they're all less than $500, then that would just be multiple misdemeanors. It would not be a felony.
That is how the General Assembly has written the statute. Yes, Your Honor. Continuing on, I think that the Section 7, the fact that it includes a period of 6 months, indicates that the General Assembly never intended aggregation to happen over a period of 8 months, and that the evidence presented by the prosecution showed that Ms. Crawford, I'll reiterate, couldn't have received those items at once and could have only received them in separate instances over the course of 18 months. There's no evidence that any one item had a value over $500. The prosecution could have charged these as misdemeanors, or if they thought, as you've noted, Judge Carparelli, thought that they could have proven to the jury, established beyond a reasonable doubt, that she did in fact receive those items within a six-month window, that could have been charged under Section 7. Instead, what they chose to do was effectively alter Section 4 of the statute to allow aggregation over 18 months and seek a felony conviction by alleviating themselves of the burden of proving that window. The version of the offense that Ms. Crawford was convicted of is an invention of the prosecution, and it's not part of Colorado law. We therefore urge this court to vacate Ms. Crawford's conviction of theft by receiving. And I'd like to reserve the rest of my time if there's no further questions.
I do have a question, Mr. Thompson. I take it you're saying this is a case of first impression interpreting the law, the theft by receiving statute. Is that right?
In regard to the limited question of
aggregation.
Yes.
Okay. There was case law under the theft statute that allows aggregation, even prior to the amendment that allowed aggregation, was there not? Case called People versus Stratton, decided in 1983. Wasn't Judge Babcock saying there that aggregation is allowed under the substantive theft counts,
well,
independent of the six-month period count?
That's under what's termed a single criminal impulse sort of charging of the offense, where a theft count that occurs, in that case was an embezzlement case, where it was a continuing offense where the defendant was repeatedly engaged, I believe on a daily basis,
right,
in that type of activity.
Right, and he allowed them to aggregate the total amounts of theft.
And there actually already is a version of theft by receiving that's encoded in Section 6, where the person is a professional fence. I'd say that is the ongoing single criminal impulse, where someone is, you know, that is their business, that is what they do. And that was neither charged nor found here, and in fact, I would say the evidence can't support it. And that's why it wasn't charged. reading that into Section 4...
If Ms. Crawford received all these items at one time, we don't know that she didn't. As Judge Carparelli pointed out, we don't really know. And then she sold them or took them to the pawn shop over a different period of time, as prosecutors seem to have shown. Why can't we find that's a single criminal impulse?
Well, Your Honor, because when you're looking at the way that the statute is constructed, the single criminal impulse, both in theft and theft by receiving, is when someone is engaged in a regular and excessive, pattern of conduct. And in this case, or in the case of theft by receiving statute, you're looking at what in Tamburello they've called a professional fencing scheme. That's the type of single criminal impulse that they've found can exceed the six-month period in theft cases, and that's also the kind of criminal impulse that you're looking at in theft by receiving cases. It just doesn't match what the courts have found consists of a single criminal impulse, and I would point the court to Divine, which is cited by the people, where five thefts over the course of 4 years, all against the same victim, were not deemed a single criminal impulse, but were actually separate offenses. As far as no further questions, I reserve the remainder of my time.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Katherine Hansen appearing on behalf of the people in this matter, registration number 25464. Your Honors, the defendant's her entire argument is based on the premise that these were multiple transactions, that these were at least three or four multiple transactions, and that as such they should have been either charged separately or charged under the aggregate provisions of the theft by receiving statute. But that's not how this case was charged. That's not how this case was argued. That's not how this case was instructed, and that's not what the jury found in this case. I think if you look at the statute as a matter of law in general, where you have a single act or a single incident or a single criminal impulse involved in a theft or a theft by receiving, you can charge it as one offense and you can aggregate the value, total value of the item sold. We do have a theft by receiving case where we have one act of receiving items with numerous items, and the court has said under those circumstances it's proper to aggregate the amounts of the items. In that case is Zeller, which is cited in my opening brief. So that we do have case law that says you can aggregate the value of the items stolen that were obtained in a theft by receiving case at the same time. So I think the next question here is, does the evidence support clearly what the prosecution's theory is, and they made their theory clear when they were responding to the defendant's argument during instruction conference. This is one act of theft by receiving. She may have gotten rid of the items at different times, and she still had some of them when they finally executed the search warrant, but this was one act of receiving. That was their theory. There's no evidence to dispute that. And I think the reasonable inferences from the evidence that we have support that theory that this was one act of reception. Basically, all the items were stolen during the same burglary. They were stolen from the same victims. They were stolen by the same person. And the defendant had many of those items when they were found or when they were pawned in groups. And so I think from this, so it's reasonable to infer from this evidence that they were given to her together, and she kept them together until, as the evidence shows, she needed to obtain money, so she pawned them at different times. And so I think if you look at a reasonable inference from this evidence, which was the prosecution's theory, that this was one act of receiving, you can aggregate, under the case law, you can aggregate the amounts of the stolen items and reach the one class four felony offense of theft by receiving.
What's wrong with Mr. Thompson's argument that says, well, if that's your approach, then why didn't you limit the period of time in which this was charged? You included a period of time of some 18 months.
Well, I think the evidence showed that first of all, it's important to recognize, as the Court of Appeals in Roberts recognized, which was not changed in the Supreme Court opinion, theft by receiving is a different kind of offense than theft. Roberts recognized theft is completed upon the taking with the coinciding of the mental state. Theft by receiving under Zuniga and as recognized by the Court of Appeals in Roberts is a continuing offense. And so when you have a continuing offense like theft by receiving, it's appropriate to charge the first date at which it could have occurred through the last date at which it was occurred. And I think the case law and the statutes recognized for continuing offenses, they continue until the last date at which the final act could have occurred. And that's when she was found in possession of these items in her home. So I believe that's why it was charged as an 18-month offense.
So the final act would not be the act of receiving, in your view. It would be the act of retaining.
Correct. I think theft by receiving under Zuniga is classified as a possessory offense, unlike theft. And so it's classified as a continuing offense. And so if you look at the case law dealing with continuing offense, and also the fact that one of the elements of theft by receiving is to retain, it's to receive, to retain, and to dispose of, that offense is not complete, or it continues up until the time that the possession no longer occurs or the retention no longer occurs. So I believe that is why they properly charged this entire month period. But at no point during the arguments, even in the defense arguments, at no point did anyone argue that this was multiple transactions. Even though the defendant made the argument during the instruction conference that these should be charged separately, at no point in his closing argument did he suggest that these were multiple receipts, multiple retentions, multiple offenses. At no point did he argue that. His entire defense was based on the theory that she did not know that they were stolen.
But why would he argue multiple transactions in closing to a jury if only one act is charged? I mean, it was a legal issue, not a fact issue, is it?
Well, that's correct. But he could have argued something with regard to the suggesting that the jury not aggregate the value of the items. And he could have argued that this was, that these were separate multiple incidents, not like the prosecution suggests, and therefore you have to unanimously agree on one, but you can't get to the $500 value on just one. So he could have argued that, but he didn't.
But on the instructions, and based on the instructions as decided by the judge, it wouldn't seem he could argue that. I mean, did the instructions permit such an argument, or would that have been contrary to the instruction?
I believe so.
Okay.
I believe he could have argued multiple. In fact, there was a unanimity instruction that was given in this case to make sure it was right after the theft by receiving, indicating that if you believe that multiple transactions occurred, you have to be unanimous on which one, basically on that all of them occurred or that the same one occurred. And so he could have argued this. Mm-hmm. That was not the prosecution's theory. And so when we're talking about whether the prosecution is entitled to charge an offense and then aggregate the value, I think what they did here is entirely proper. That doesn't mean he couldn't have argued it as a multiple transaction, essentially in an effort to get the value threshold below the $500 limit.
Let me take you back to Zeller. You're right, Zeller says what he said, but the problem with it is that it was under a statute that then read, if Justice Erickson quoted it correctly, a statute that prohibited receiving, unlawfully receiving, quote, a thing or things of value of more than $100. So the statute at the time of Zeller apparently used the plural, whereas the statute that we're dealing with in 1990, whenever this was, did not use such terminology.
Well, I think there's two responses to that. First of all, they did not rely on that particular language in finding that they're allowed to aggravate. And second of all, I think the statutory language for statutory interpretations that requires consideration of the singular as the plural and vice versa would come into play here. And so I think the analysis in Zeller, which is limited.
say the least, five
yes.
words maybe.
But it says what it says, and it supports our position that when there's one theft by receiving, but multiple items are stolen, and received, that you can aggregate the value. And I think if you look at all the cases in the theft context, and the theft statute has the same aggregate provisions that the theft by receiving statute does, and it has the same single individual, theft is a class, two misdemeanor if it's under 100, those kind of things. Those cases, Gill, Stratton, Devine, all recognize the idea when you have Even if you do have multiple acts, which I'm not suggesting that we have here, but even if you did, you can still, and they're shown that they're part of the same criminal impulse, you can still charge them as one offense and aggregate the values. In fact, I think it was, I'm not sure if it was Stratton or Devine, that talked about if the converse was true, you would have a defendant arguing that the charges were multiplicitous by charging a separate theft count for every single item that was stolen. And so I think what we have here is one prosecution, one reception, one charge that was properly charged and the amounts aggregated. But even under the theory that there were multiple receptions, the case law supports considering it as one charge and aggregating the totals. Unless this court has any...
Can we avoid the aggregation issue by just finding that the saddle had a value of more than $500?
Absolutely.
Even on the testimony of the saddle shop owner that it was a retail value? Help me with that one.
I believe you can, because I think if you look at the testimony, there was two pieces of testimony about value for the saddle. You have the owner of the saddle saying that retail value was $1,500, and then you have the saddle shop owner saying retail value would be $1,200 to $1,400. And I recognize that case law, you know, you can't necessarily use retail value if the item is quite a bit older. We have the cases in Moore, I think, where the items were over 20 years old, things like that. But I think we have enough evidence here to indicate it was fairly new.
How do we, tell me how I know that, how I can find that in the record, whether it was new or not.
Well, we have the defendant, the saddle was brought to the shop about 3 months after. We have testimony from the saddle shop owner. Saddle was brought to the shop about 3 months before, or 3 months after.
She bought it?
She bought it. Oh. I believe there was a three-month period of time there. And
was it 3 months after she bought it, or three months after she first reported it missing?
Well, no, it wouldn't have been after she reported it missing, because I think she had the repair work done on it before it was stolen.
Okay.
So I believe that there was evidence in there implying that it was brought in 3 months after he bought it, and this was he recognizes this was a reasonable amount of time from when he recognized the saddle. So I believe, I mean, recognize the saddle, recognize this is something I just worked on a few months ago, and I believe there was some indication in the record that she had brought it in, she had bought it, and then fairly soon after had the stirrups twisted or whatever the work was done so that she could use it in the manner in which she wanted to. Yeah. So I think certainly there's not direct evidence saying exactly the date she bought it, but from that evidence, I think there's a reasonable inference that the retail value is fairly close to what it was worth at the time it was stolen, and certainly well over the $500 threshold. Unless this court has any further questions, we would ask that this court affirm the defendant's convictions. Thank you.
Thank you.
To briefly address the evidence of regarding the value of the saddle was never brought in, and pictures of the saddle were never brought in, and the jury was never given the opportunity to look at the condition of the saddle.
Was there testimony that it was taken to the saddle shop shortly after she bought it?
Shortly after Ms. Ron bought it?
Yeah.
I believe that's true, yes.
And then the owner of the saddle shop said a few months later it came back in as a, stolen item. I'm using loose terminology.
Well, the other evidence that regarding the saddle, in fact, the only evidence regarding the resale value of the saddle in the or resale market for saddles, said that unless you can look at the value or the condition of the saddle at the time of the resale, this is Stephanie Agthe, I believe her name is, you can't determine its resale value. The jury was never given an opportunity to examine the condition of the saddle and couldn't determine a retail value. I mean, the way the saddle market works, I'm not really sure, and the jury wasn't either. The values could decline precipitously, and we don't know, and we can't examine the saddle to get a determination of that.
But just to answer my question, there was testimony in the record that Mr. Guy worked on the saddle when it was new, and then he saw it again a few months later when this other person brought it in for whatever she brought it in for, and then he called the police.
That is true, Your Honor.
On the period of time of just a few months.
That's my understanding, okay. Yes.
And he expressed an opinion as to its value.
Its value at the time of, or a new retail value, not the value of it when he saw it months later. He didn't testify to that.
So he testified that new, it would have cost?
$1,400 to $1,200, okay. I believe. In any case, I'd also like to dispute the idea that the defense didn't argue that there weren't multiple transactions. The defense did argue that the evidence could only establish that the saddle, that Ms. Crawford came to possess the saddle sometime between the time of the theft in April of 2004, that she had loose stones in her possession no earlier than November of 2004 when she received her car back from the impound, and that all the items that they found at the pawn shop, there's no indication of when she received those. So as far as we know, she received them the day before she came to pawn them on August of 2005. Finally, I would just like to note that the people's reliance on these old theft cases, these old embezzlement cases, is misplaced because the recent legislative declaration regarding how the theft statute and the theft by receiving statute works in response to Roberts indicates that these continuing criminal impulses in Part 1B of that legislative declaration indicates that it applies only to theft and not theft by receiving. These embezzlement cases, which say the criminal impulse can extend and can surpass the six-month period, was omitted from the theft by receiving statute. And in fact, the General Assembly altered or amended the theft statute to include Section 4B, which specifically allows these continuing offense crimes to be tried that way, whereas the theft by receiving statute was not so amended. And I would again posit that's because you're looking at a situation where they had already made preparations for that with Section 6, which has a limitless period of time if they can prove that the defendant was operating as a professional fence. I see I've run out of time, so unless the court has any more questions, I thank you for your time and ask that you vacate Ms. Crawford's conviction.
Thank you for your arguments today. Case will stand submitted. We will get you a written opinion in due course.